Hey everybody, welcome to this week's podcast. There's no special announcements or anything this week, so let's jump right into it and see what we have. First up, Digital Foundry just reviewed Cruise and Blast for the Nintendo Switch, and while it's a brand new modern game, not a retro game, it is 90s arcade racer inspired, and it looked awesome. It looked so good that before I even finished the video, I paused, jumped on Amazon, and tried to buy it. Which is, in fact, my only complaint about the game, is it was kind of hard to find locally, so I ended up just ordering it and having it delivered. But that's kind of something that I always like to bring up the point of, is if you have any local stores, especially smaller stores that you could support when buying these games, please do. I always try the local stores first for used stuff, but sometimes you have to just get it from big retailers. There really isn't any other choice. So that's what I ended up doing. I did a live stream about it, and I loved it. This might be one of the best, if not the best, silly arcade racer I have ever played. It had elements that felt a little Crazy Taxi-esque, even though there was no taxi part of the game at all. Of course, there was a big shout-out to all the cruising games, but it was just awesome. I really liked it. You know, if you're looking for a realistic simulation-style racer, this is not for you. But if you just want fun silliness with, you know, there's still skill involved. It's not just press a button and smash into stuff, but it's definitely on the lighter-hearted side of things, and it was absolutely awesome. So I really wanted to write about it and talk about it here just because while it is a modern game, I think if you liked any of the old 90s arcade stuff, you would love this game. So at the very least, give the DF video a try and see what you think. Remute's latest album, Living Electronics, is now available both for download, and there's still some available to purchase on a real Game Boy cartridge. And for anyone unfamiliar with Remute's work, he is a musician that does a lot of stuff on original game consoles. So at the moment, I believe there's Genesis, Super Nintendo, PC Engine / TurboGrafx-16, and Game Boy. I think that's every one of them. I don't think I'm forgetting them. But basically, it's music that's generated by the consoles. So this is not one of those cases where somebody put an MP3 player in a pass-through cart, which is still neat and everything, but this is music as you would have heard it if this album was made in the 80s or 90s on any of these consoles. So it's really unique, and I'm just a fan of Remute's music, which all of his stuff is available to preview on Bandcamp. So if you're not a fan, which, no disrespect, right? Music is totally subjective. So if you're not a fan, maybe you could give it a listen and you don't have to worry about it. But if you like his music as much as I do, I would definitely consider picking up at least one of the albums, just because it's such a unique thing to have a music album on a video game cartridge. So I have links to Stone Age Gamer embedded right in the post, because depending on where you live in the world, it might be much, much easier these days, especially with shipping going through the roof, just to pick it up from them. Of course, you could buy it directly from Remute. Stone Age Gamer is an official reseller, so it's not like they, you know, illegally stole their album or anything. It's all legit. You'll never find a mislink like that, but I'm only human. I'm sure I would make a mistake at least once in my life, but I try to always link to only legit stuff, and this definitely is. Techno Optimistic is the one that I think I personally liked best so far, but once again, that's 100% subjective, and I haven't gotten Electronic Lifestyle yet. I'm waiting till I get it. I heard the first single that he released back when the preview came out, but I'm waiting till I actually get the physical cartridge to listen to it, and I haven't decided if I want to listen to it on my Game Boy with headphones, or if I want to put the Game Boy into a stereo and listen to it through speakers. Any thoughts on that, anybody? Even Remute, if you happen to be listening, any thoughts on the best way to experience it for the first time? But either way, I just really wanted to share all this stuff because it's unique and I like it a lot, and I assume a bunch of my other fellow nerds might like it too, especially if you're a video game nerd and a music nerd. This is both of your worlds smashing together in an awesome game cartridge. I just did a live stream with the creator of Project Nested, which is a piece of software that allows you to patch NES ROMs to work on original SNES hardware, which is something that I always thought was completely impossible. Now, in the live stream, we went into detail about how it's done, how the creator was able to pull it off, and exactly what needs to be done in order to do this, but I'll do a quick run through now just for anybody who's interested, because I imagine a lot of people would want to give this a try themselves. But basically, you download the software, and you download the NES ROM that you would like to play, and then you check the compatibility data sheet. Maybe someday this part of it will be automated somehow, but since it's a very new thing at the moment, manually check the compatibility list and see what changes, if any, need to be made. Then open up the software, load the NES ROM, and make whatever changes that were referenced in the compatibility sheet, and then hit Save SNES, and out pops a Super Nintendo ROM that works on everything. Emulation, hardware emulation, or original consoles. And you can use any ROM cart to do it, or theoretically you could build an NES cart from scratch to do it if you wanted to. I wouldn't suggest doing that, just I wanted to say that so that you could visualize that there's nothing extra going on. This isn't like an FPGA core running the NES core on a Super Nintendo. This is running on Super Nintendo hardware. And I'm going to oversimplify here just to try to make it a little bit easier to visualize, but this basically does just-in-time emulation, real-time emulation. So whenever the commands are being sent to the NES hardware, this software reroutes them to the SNES hardware chips and does any translation that might need to be made. Now, once again, that is a gross oversimplification. I am not the expert. I just kind of wanted to paint a picture for people to be able to visualize this. And it works very well, but one really interesting feature is that as you play through the game, it kind of learns the game, and it gets faster and better as you go. So the first level of every game, you know, not so much the first level, but maybe the first 30 seconds of any game, it's going to have some slowdown and some glitches and stuff like that. But as you play, it starts to get better and better. And then another cool feature is that it saves a save game file, regardless of if the game has save games anyway, and you could go back and import that save data into Project Nested software, and then repatch the original NES ROM, and it'll save all of that learned information to the new SNES ROM, and then when you go back to play it, there is no slowdown because it already imports all of the learned info. So it's really impressive. It's something that if you're a retro nerd at all, you should probably give this a try just for the heck of it. And maybe someday we could figure out a way to send all of this info back so that the next person that goes to patch a ROM could somehow all of have that stuff automatically downloaded through a profile, so you don't even need to look up the compatibility sheet. It'll just do it. Now, that's obviously a lot of pressure to put on the developer. Maybe the community could help with that. And that's not something I would expect anytime soon, because this project was a lot of work. And that's kind of the icing on the cake at the end there. But I wanted to add all that just kind of to give the perspective and the visualizations of what this could actually turn into. But essentially, it's a pretty darn cool way of playing NES games on Super Nintendo. And while, according to the developer himself, it will never be perfect, it doesn't really need to be. This is really cool and something that, heck, even as a proof of concept was amazing to try out. But I think it could be used for a bit more than that. So I highly recommend reading the post and trying for yourself. And if you want a sense of what it's like, check out the live stream as well. But this is something that, you know, you need to see it to believe it. So thanks very much to myself, 086, the developer. I'm not talking about myself in the third person suddenly, for jumping on and doing that with me. I had a really great time, and I hope to do some kind of live streams with them again, because that was awesome. In last week's Nintendo Direct, they announced a few things that were retro game related. The first is that they're going to be offering Nintendo 64 and Genesis games on the Switch Online service in late October, and they didn't announce pricing, but they did say that there would be a different price structure of sorts. So I don't know if that's a way to charge us more, or if there's just going to be different tiers or whatnot, but I guess we'll have to wait till late October to find out. The other thing they announced were Bluetooth N64 and Genesis 3-button controllers for $50 each, available exclusively to Switch Online members. And this is both really exciting and gives me caution. The exciting part is that both of those controllers haven't gotten much love over the years, and I am a huge fan of the Genesis 3-button controller. It's my second favorite controller of all time. I think it's SNES, that one, and then maybe Saturn 3rd for me. It's just preference, there's no right or wrong here. So I'm excited to see those controllers get some love, and I'm probably going to buy the Genesis one anyway just because. However, lag is something that nobody seems to be talking about, but is imperative to a good retro gaming experience. Now, I completely understand that your average person who plays Switch Online is probably a casual retro gamer, and, you know, variable emulation latency isn't going to ruin their experience. But coupling that with a laggy controller might make things worse, and Nintendo's always kind of had laggy Wii U and Switch controllers. So you might benefit by getting something like an 8-bit DOE controller or a wired solution or something else. The other thing, too, is what is the lag going to be like through Mister? Because having a very low-latency Genesis 3-button wireless controller, not necessarily Bluetooth, would be awesome for a lot of people. But if it's going to be a frame and a half to 2.5 frames of variable lag, I don't know. You might not notice that, but if you're playing on something like the Mister and you're getting a zero lag, incredibly accurate experience, would you really want to add any to it? And maybe the answer is it doesn't matter for some people or some games, or maybe it does, but I'm going to probably buy the Genesis one just because I'm a fan anyway, but if you do buy it, buy them with caution. They'll probably eventually be added to the compatibility list for Mister. You'll probably be able to use them on software emulation, but it might be as laggy as Nintendo's other stuff, and you might end up benefiting from a different controller. So I guess good news with some caution. I don't want to call it bad news yet, but I definitely wanted to keep everybody informed. Last weekend, the fourth round of RetroTINK 5X orders went out and sold out relatively quick, and I just wanted to let everybody know that Mike had already said that another batch is on its way, and it should be up for sale in about a month. And I wanted to talk about this just to reassure everybody that they're still coming. The part shortage is very real, and it's making it hard for everybody to make stuff, but Mike is really bending over backwards, getting batch after batch of these made, and scrambling to get as many made as possible. So if you still don't have one and you've been saving up or you've been trying to get one, wait one more month and hopefully you'd be able to get your turn for one. I also do really like the fact that Mike is not doing pre-orders. He's only selling whatever's in that batch, which, you know, there's no right or wrong way of doing this, by the way. I'm certainly not talking down to anybody who takes pre-orders, but I just like how there's always a finite amount, and I really like that when you press buy, you know that there's something physically in a box in and about Mike's office that's going to get shipped very quickly, usually. So there's just something about that that's pretty reassuring. Whereas, you know, I'm still the type of person where if I believe in a product, and, you know, especially if it's a company that I've trusted, I'm very happy to hand over my money knowing that it might take a year to get here. But it's just nicer to know that it's ready to go. So I wanted to make sure that I know there's always people who, you know, don't know about the podcast here, don't know Mike's history. They just heard about the RetroTINK 5X and go, why is this thing always sold out? It's stupid that there's no pre-orders. You know, they're just creating fake demand or something, and that's the opposite of what Mike's doing. So I wanted to just politely remind all of you that. And if you run into anybody that doesn't know anything about the RetroTINK products, you might want to politely remind them that there's no weirdness going on here. It's just a small company trying really, really hard to do their best to get stuff out there. So that's basically it. If you didn't get one already and you're looking for one, wait about a month. Dan Mons just wrote up a post talking about some of the amazing things going on in the Genesis homebrew scene, and I'll quickly run through it, but if you're a fan of this stuff, please take a moment to check out Dan's posts and the links that are in there, because this is all super impressive. But first, Pigsy's Retro Game Dev Tutorials has released a bunch of videos on their process of porting Symphony of the Night to the Sega Genesis. Now, before you get your hopes up, the plan isn't to port the entire game to be playable and downloadable, you know, or at least that's not their goal. Somebody else might jump in and help out and it might end up that way. But I think it's more of like a, let's just see what could be done with some creativity type of thing. And even Gabriel Pyron has jumped in as well to add some of the color coding stuff that he's done to make it look really, really impressive. So that alone is really cool and worth your time to check out. At the very least, you know, skim through some of the videos and check out the work that they've been doing. But Retro Game Dev Tutorials also posted a bunch of videos on how to port Game Gear Shinobi to the Genesis. And that's kind of the opposite. Instead of taking something with the power of a PlayStation and demaking it to the Genesis, now you're taking essentially an SMS game with more colors and porting that to the Genesis. So that's pretty cool. I believe it's not just a Game Gear to SMS port, which I like those too, but I think this is really looking to take advantage of all of the power of the Genesis, not just run it in SMS mode. So that's also pretty cool. And another thing that's kind of mind-blowing is, I can't say this name, GASSEGA, I'm so sorry, everybody knows I'm the worst at pronouncing names, I don't ever mean any offense by it, but they ported, I don't want to call it ported, but they basically worked on the first level and the scramble intro to Star Fox on the Genesis. So no Super FX chip, they just found a way to draw the graphics on the Genesis, and it looks really, really neat. So once again, you know, if you're at all interested in any of this homebrew stuff, at the very least, take a look at Dan's post, but you'll probably want to spend a minute checking out all of the things he wrote about, because there's just some super impressive stuff going on. And, you know, maybe one day I could do kind of a deeper dive on each of these projects, or a live stream and talk to the developer or something like that, but either way, it's just awesome. So if you're a Genesis fan, definitely check out that post. Ian, aka The Historical Nerd, has recently posted a video about the history of the Nintendo 64, and he tells the story great. I thought it was an entertaining video, but it was also mostly done in Blender, so it looked really impressive as well. There's a ton of 3D modeling, and the whole thing was just as entertaining to listen to and hear the story about as it was to just look at it. So if you're even slightly interested in the N64, definitely give Ian's video a try. I'm a big fan of the sound of Ian's voice. I think he should probably do the voice for like the most interesting man in the world or condom commercials or something, but he also pays even less attention to punctuation than Christopher Walken, so if that would drive you crazy, I don't know, maybe at least just check it out for the visuals, but either way, I enjoyed the video a lot, and shout out to Ian for making some cool videos like that. Pre-orders are now open for a limited time only for a new wireless Retro Fighters controller called the Blade GC that's kind of GameCube style and works with the original GameCube, the Switch, and PC. So at first glance, it kind of looks like the same as your standard Retro Fighters controller, but the button layout is that of a GameCube, and it has two pressure-sensitive triggers, Z buttons on both sides, and analog sticks built in. So overall, it seems like it should be a pretty cool way to play GameCube games or GameCube-style games like Smash on the Switch or on the original console. It doesn't specifically say it on the Retro Fighters page, but I'm assuming there's two dongle receivers, one that's a WaveBird GameCube style and the other one is just a standard USB style. That would make the most sense, but if you're a fan of the layout of the GameCube, that would mean it should work on the Mister or software emulation like Dolphin or pretty much anything else that you could plug a USB device into. So this is a pretty neat thing if you're into that style of controller. It comes in three colors, blue, orange, or black, and it's available to purchase right now. I have the Castlevania links right in the description for anybody that wants it. But unfortunately, because of the component shortage and the potential for not just availability, but the popularity of this, there might only be one of these controllers. And I don't think this is just a way to, you know, artificially boost sales through FOMO or something like that. I think they're just being honest with everybody and saying, you know, hey, we're going to try to make one run of these. We might make more, we might not. I mean, I could be wrong. Maybe they're intentionally trying to freak us all out, but I don't get that impression from this at all. I just think it's something really neat that fans of Smash might really enjoy playing. As always, I'm really interested to see lag test results for this, of course. But, you know, wireless controllers have certainly gotten better, and there are certainly some good options. So, of course, we will be testing them as soon as they come out. But if you want one, definitely pick one up now, because, you know, there's a limited time pre-order. I think it ends in about a week, maybe less than that by the time this comes out. So if you were considering it, you're going to have to jump on it right now. I know it stinks. It's I never like feeling pressured into buying something, but it is what it is, I guess. So either way, if you're even slightly interested, check out Vanessa's post, because it's got all the info you need, including the links. Kind of good news, kind of bad news about this next one, so maybe if you're interested, you could help. But Retro Gamer Store has just opened pre-orders on Smoke Super Famicom shells. So the pre-orders that were already out were of the clear ones. I did a live stream assembling the Super Nintendo clear ones. I did the Smoke too, I think, on stream. They both looked awesome. I honestly liked them both. But Retro Gamer Store is having trouble filling the 500 minimum order quantity for the clear ones. And a lot of people were saying, well, you know, I'd much rather have the smoked version anyway. Can you open up pre-orders on those? So they decided to do it. But if the total order of 500 isn't placed, everybody's going to get refunded and the smoke one's going to get canceled. So it really stinks, because these are super high quality, really nice shells. Now, as always, when I talk about these things, I need to make the point that they're expensive, but they're not overpriced. And I think so many people just can't tell the difference between the two. And I'm sorry to be a little disrespectful by saying that, but it's not like Retro Gamer Store is having these made for a dollar a piece and selling them for $120. These are really high quality shells, and they're paying a lot of money in low quantities to have them made. So the price is fair based on what you're getting and what they have to go through to get them, but it's still really expensive. So I do completely understand all of the people that were like, that looks really cool, but I'll just keep my own shell. That's a little too much money for me. That's a perfectly fair perspective to have. I would like to see these sell, and I do think a lot of people would really love them if they get to see it in person, especially if you had a yellow old cracked shell. I bought a yellowed Super Famicom just to buy one of these to put in it. So I'm pretty excited to see how that one's going to look. But, you know, it's really up to you to decide if they're going to get made. So, you know, it's kind of hard to talk about, because while I would love to see these get made, I'm not going to tell everybody to go out and drop more than the cost on the Super Nintendo on a beautiful case for it. But if you have the extra money and you've been going back and forth on whether you wanted one or not, now's the time to step up to the plate, because they have to fill orders on this one and the other one. So it's just one of these things where, you know, everybody, like, I'm kind of on everybody's team for this one. I want to see these get funded, but I completely understand if that's too much money to spend on something. So just check out Vanessa's post, look at the pictures, see if it's something that you would want, either this one or the clear one. We have links to everything in here. And I believe you could pre-order through Castlemania as well, or you will be able to. I got to double check with Ryan about that. So, you know, depending on if you have Castle Cash or if you're in the US, especially, you know, on the West Coast, so you get your shipping a lot quicker, you know, that might be more helpful to you. But either way, check out Vanessa's post if you're interested, and hopefully we'll see these get funded and picked up. And even if it's something that you don't think you would want for yourself, consider spreading the news about this, because there are probably enough people out there. I mean, there's probably 1,000 people out there, 500 and 500, that would absolutely love to have these. They just don't know they're out there. So please, you know, if you're a content creator yourself, if you're just somebody with a whole bunch of retro nerd friends like me, just mention it. Because if somebody doesn't know about it, they might be really sad to find out that they could have had one, but the orders got canceled because not enough people pre-ordered. So anyway, sorry to kind of ramble about that, but I really like these things, and I think if more people saw them, they probably would sell out the minimum orders that they needed to purchase these. So hopefully we can spread the good word and see these things out there. Well, that's it for this week. I had to record these a tiny bit earlier than usual, so there's a small chance that a post or two may go through before these go live. And of course, I'll just talk about it on next week's podcast, like I usually do when that happens. But I did want to just politely remind everybody that we try really hard to get anything time-sensitive in. So while there's a few articles that I'm in the midst of writing that I haven't had time to finish yet, they're not time-sensitive. It's not a pre-order. It's not, you know, something that you're going to miss out on. And while I would love to have time to get everything out there. You know, we try to schedule things in order of priority, but there's been plenty of times where things are announced on a Thursday for something that's happening on Saturday, so I didn't know about it in time for the podcast, and, you know, it's too late for the next week's. And heck, I've had stuff like that happen where I pretty much make the podcast live and 5 minutes later a big announcement comes out. So I just wanted to remind everybody, you know, if you're looking for something or if you've been waiting for something, just keep your eyes on the main page of RetroRGB.com. That's where all the news posts are. And we'll try really hard to get everything that we know about in time for the podcast, but it sometimes just doesn't work that way. So anyway, thanks to everybody who watches, listens, plays nicely in the comments, and especially thank you to everybody who supports in any way possible, because you are the only reason that any of this stuff is still existing. So the podcast, the website, the tons of behind the scenes stuff that goes on, and everything that's wrapped around it. So thank you all so much, and I'll see you next week.